This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. For months, the Malaysian Citizenship Rights Alliance, constitutional experts and more have been pushing back against many of the proposed constitutional amendments on citizenship by the Home Ministry due to its regressive and cruel nature that is said to only perpetuate statelessness, make statelessness worse. Now, last week, the Constitution Amendment Bill on Citizenship 2024 was tabled in Parliament. Interestingly, the bill wasn't voted on or debated due to, quote-unquote, a lack of time. So what is the content of the bill that eventually hit Parliament floors? What does it mean that the bill wasn't voted on? What changes do we need to see before Parliament sits again in June? Joining me to discuss all of this are two of the members of the Malaysian Citizenship Rights Alliance, Suri Kempe of Family Frontiers and Malini Romalo, Director of Social Protection and the Development of Human Resources for Rural Areas. As always, this conversation is also available as podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on the BFM app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Suri, Malini, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
What does being stateless mean, and what are the challenges faced by the stateless people? Just refresh our memories a little bit.
Sure. Statelessness is the legal status of individuals who do not hold citizenship or nationality in any country. It disproportionately impacts racial, ethnic, linguistic, religious, sometimes gender and other minority groups. One of the reasons could be weak civil registration or documentation systems, administrative and practical barriers, or a combination of these. It can also arise when laws which make sense under certain circumstances, that's exactly where Malaysia is right now, are applied unfairly or inconsistently. For example, a law governing citizenship eligibility might be reasonably good in theory, but if it's enforced arbitrarily, perhaps due to discrimination, administrative errors, or political reasons, it can lead to individuals being deprived of citizenship without just a cause and just rendering them stateless.
What are your overall thoughts on the bill that was finally tabled in Parliament?
So there were some good bits. For example, the Mothers Amendment, the amendment that allows mothers to confer citizenship, was included in the bill. And we've been lobbying and advocating for that for a very, very, very long time. And they also dropped this catch-all provision that safeguards against statelessness, which is Section 1E. Those were some good things. But there were also some weaknesses in the bill, right? So overall, what do these regressive slash weak parts of the bill do? They take away existing rights. How do they do that? By moving certain categories of people who currently have a vested constitutional right to citizenship into categories of citizenship by registration. And citizenship by registration, again, is the category of where you have to apply for citizenship, and that application has to then be approved by the bureaucracy, right? And so which sections were those? There is this one section, 1A, which might affect, for example, constitutional protections for, around citizenship for Orang Asli and Orang Asal in particular. So Malaysian-born permanent residents. There's Section 26.2, which might potentially render a previously foreign wife to a Malaysian man and who is now a Malaysian citizen, stateless. And the third is this reduction of age for citizenship applications from 21 to 18, right? The other thing is, remember how I talked about the Mothers Amendment that was potentially, that was a good thing? The problem with the bill is that now it states that these that particular amendment will not be retroactive, meaning it will not apply to children currently alive.
I don't know why we have to rush through things. We civil society organizations and MPs did not get to see the actual wordings of the bill. We're talking about constitutional amendments. And even though we knew the extent of the amendment, and I think one good thing is on 22nd March, it was a Friday, and the Home Minister, YB Saifuddin, he basically drops two amendments. He says that, you know, the foundling provision as well as the constitutional safeguard on statelessness is no more going to be amended. But this is the importance of citing an actual bill, because when we cited the bill, we noted, yes, constitutional safeguard section 1E is no more in there, but 19B was actually still being amended. And why it needs to be amended, of course, because it was interrelated to the permanent residency provision. And so currently the founding provision reads that it assumes that the mother is a permanent resident. However, because they're going ahead with the permanent residency amendment, so they decided to change the word to assume the mother is a citizen. And now, what's the implication of this? When it's going to be read in this way? While we were okay at that point, but we never got a time to sort of assess how is this going to be read together? What's the implication when you take cases to the court? How is this going to be, challenged? What is going to be the outcome? And so I definitely am not happy, because I also realise that MPs are not constitutional experts. And to be given a bill on a Monday and then to decide it on Wednesday, because that was the plan, the second and the third reading was to happen on a Wednesday, I really am not sure how they could have pulled this, understanding the implication, and especially in a long run, a country is going to get impacted off these decisions.
Suri, you, along with Family Frontiers, y'all have been pushing for mothers with foreign spouses and overseas-born children to have the rights to confer their citizenship onto their children, just like fathers can do right now. So this is a sexist law. So in the bill that hit, that was eventually tabled in Parliament, this one positive change is there, but like you said, it will not be retroactive. What does this mean?
So the amendment not being retroactive essentially means, like I said earlier, it will not apply to existing children of Malaysian mothers, specifically any child born before the amendment takes effect. Or in other words, children who are alive right now will not benefit from this reform.
So right? All the family mothers that have been part of Family Frontiers campaigning for years, including many mothers we have interviewed, their children, even if this law gets passed, will not be able to get citizenship.
Correct. So the effect is to prevent future discrimination, right? And they and what that translates into is that so many Malaysian mothers who have not had the opportunity to submit citizenship applications for their children under the current provision, which is Article 15.2, they will still be treated as foreigners, right? And it's even more worrying than for children who are above 21 years old. Now, these kids potentially have aged out of qualifying for applying under Article 15.2 while their applications were in process, right? So they apply, they get rejected, they apply, they get rejected again, and suddenly they're above 21 and they no longer qualify under Article 15.2. Now, they have no alternative pathway to citizenship. And despite having grown up here, having family here, they will be forced to leave their families now. Now, some people might say, that's okay. Why don't you just apply under Article 19, which is the naturalization, right? That's one pathway. But the qualifier for that is that you have to have obtained permanent residency first. And the process of obtaining permanent residency is very opaque and really unknown, right? Nobody knows how long it will take. And so it's really an uncertain pathway. So there are quite a number of hurdles. And for a lot of these adult children, young adult children, or even the ones that even young right now, right? It's an uncertain pathway. And they're still in the same position that they found themselves in even before.
there is something that I think like shocked a lot of people last week when the news came out that there are orang asli in Malaysia.
Yes.
Orang asli, indigenous people of this land that are not considered citizens. I think that was a mind-blowing moment for a lot of people. Yeah. There was a lot of reaction on social media. So could you contextualize that for us? And also how this leads to a particular point that y'all have been stressing out since that news, right? That if you have a red IC, if you're a PR, you know, you could be a PR with citizenship in other countries. You could be a PR, you know, Malaysian-born PR with no citizenship in other countries. How do all of these things tie together?
When we talk about PR, we assume that somebody has to be a foreigner who has a permanent residency card. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, in Malaysia, the way the stateless people have been treated for a long time is inconsistency in the documents that's been issued to them. Even though the federal constitution provides automatic citizenship for them, but the National Registration Department did not do so. Instead, they brought them through the route of you know, citizenship by registration or issuing them with different documents such as permanent residency card. So how they had gone about it is that if you look behind the cards, and which is all over Twitter sometime last week, is that the negara asal. Negara asal is basically country of origin. And if you're a stateless person, you would find the negara asal being Malaysia or explicitly stateless is mentioned, right? So that's how you would differentiate someone who is Malaysian but does not have another country citizenship or Malaysia citizenship, a person of this country origin but stateless, right? Mm-hmm. And the way this card has been issued has a lot of historical backgrounds as well. Actually, I would say, as we were discussing in a group yesterday, we heard that, you know, we realized that 90% of individuals who are citizen in this country today actually got their citizenship through this provision because you were once a PR and the children that were born to this PRs are now citizens, which is us.
Right.
Right. And somehow, as I now go back to how the process has been really inconsistent, right before coming in here, I reached out to my colleagues who were in Sabah and Sarawak, so Aimee and Simon. You know, I actually asked them this question, like, if I asked you this, what's going to be your answer? And both of them had a similar answer to it, you know. So it starts off that, you know, for historical reasons, in terms of the creation of Malaysia, that during the formation of Malaysia, it was really not clear in many border and interior villages whether the indigenous communities were in the Malaysian territory or not. Therefore, they were granted permanent residency instead of citizenship. So because you were unsure of the borders, whether they are here, whether they are deciding to go to the other side and stuff like that, you had issued them a permanent residency card. And also over the years, what has happened as well is that you might have a gap of one generation of two generation of orang asli who has not got themselves registered. And now when the third generation is attempting to register, because there is a missing link, they would probably issue you a permanent residency card.
Right.
Yeah. So that these are the some of the reasons of why one stateless, one orang asal person would be issued with a permanent residency card. And it's quite complex here because we're talking about, you know, my colleague Simon basically said, like, can you imagine a village is like 8 hours, 10 hours away from NRD and you have to fork out about 500 ringgit to 1,000 ringgit to go and do a registration. And when you do reach NRD, they don't simplify the process. They have to use the same process that they have been using for everyone else, ask you to fill up the form, bring the documents. If you don't have the documents, then you have to redo the trip and you will never be able to apply for citizenship, right?
Right.
So these are the actual reasons. And as we speak now, a lot of them are permanent residents and they don't know that this is happening to them.
Right. So what's interesting is, like you all mentioned, that there was a point where we really felt that there was no time at all left, you know, when on the when we were approaching the final day of this round of parliament. And then something wildly unexpected happened. Tell me about what happened. I mean, yes, the bill was tabled. So everybody was, you know, sitting at the edge of the seats. Overall, very regressive bill being tabled in Parliament. And then Parliament just adjourned. What happened?
Yeah. So there were a bunch of, like, we were there in Parliament, like you said, on the edge of our seats, right? Just waiting for this bill to go through. So it had gone through its first reading on Monday. And a first reading is essentially when a bill is introduced. So you read the title to the day one, right? Yeah, the title is read. That's considered the first reading. Then on Wednesday, it was supposed to go into the second reading. And that's the point where, like, the whole Parliament then enters the whole day one, then enters into the committee stage where each clause of the bill is kind of debated and you go into debate, essentially, right? And then it was supposed to be voted on, right? And what happened was, so here we are sitting on the edge of our seats and just waiting. And the bill that's prior to the citizenship constitutional amendment bill is the cybersecurity bill. And it dragged, like, it gets introduced post lunch, it gets introduced and they're debating and they're talking about it, and it just keeps going and going and going, and suddenly it's like it's 4 o'clock, okay. And then it's 5 o'clock and they're still going on the cybersecurity bill. And we're just like, oh, well, what's going to happen now, right? and so around 5:15, if I'm not mistaken, right? Around 5:15, suddenly the constitutional amendment bill comes up for its second reading. And we're like, oh my God, wait, Parliament's going to run, like, Parliament's going to be done at around 5:30. And the minister, like, stands up and is about to read a speech. And the Dewan Rakyat speaker is saying, well, Mantri, you have about, like, I can give you, you know, 15 minutes before we have to wrap up. And so he just has enough time to make his speech on the bill. And then the clock runs out. And then the bill is essentially pushed to the next session. Right. And we're just like, whoa. Because we expected, the assumption was that the bill would be voted on that day.
Right.
So we were like, oh my God. Okay. So, so yeah, that's essentially what happened. And
So how do we make sense of what happened? And was what happened in Parliament ultimately to the benefit of NGOs? And all? Do we have essentially more time now to deal with the situation? Did y'all have a sigh of relief? Confusion?
For me, it was definitely confusion. One is, it was the last day of the parliamentary sitting. And I was like, asking people, like, wait, can they extend another day? Does it mean that our bill gets debated, like, tomorrow, right? And I remember asking an MP, like, do you all need to book up Puasa or not? Like, you know, would it be debated? Like, can you extend the hours? And the MP said, like, well, it's unlikely, but then if the speaker decides to extend the hours, he can. It can go up till the evening, right? So even though it was 5:30, I think there was still a lot of possibilities of that being pushed through during that sitting. But if for me, and I think a lot of our group members, we definitely felt a sense of relief because first is actual wording. And I always feel, and it's also a situation that we have, a lot of us are from West Malaysia who have spoken up on this. A lot of our East Malaysian colleagues may not be fully aware of the extent and the impact for their population. And it was only about, you know, after we returned home and people were citing this bill, and then one of our Sabah colleagues actually mentions that, hey, 16A is being amended, is being repealed actually, and 16A is basically a provision that would ensure the pre-independence population in Sabah and Sarawak to apply, who arrived before Malaysia Day, to apply for citizenship through a registration provision. And by removing this provision, it means that elderly population who don't have citizenship may not qualify anymore through any other provisions, right? And I definitely was taken back. I remember texting in a group. I was like, was there an oversight from us? Because, you know, we were very clear, 5 regressive amendments. And then now you have 16A, which is to do with Sabah and Sarawak.
Right.
So I think for me, that second was that, you know, a lot more needs to be done in Sabah and Sarawak. We need more NGOs to realize mm-hmm. the implications, study it, and tell us that, you know, if it makes sense to them. Yeah.
If I can, yeah, just jump in mm-hmm. on that. I mean, is it good or bad? Well, then we know that the next session is in 3 months.
Yes. Do we have the time, the opportunity to push for further change? Because this is so unprecedented. And mm-hmm. what's also interesting is that it would be a little bit less confusing if the bill wasn't tabled altogether. Mm. And then you just, you know, not enough time, you're going to table it next session. Yeah. But now we have this bill that most people who are progressive, who care about human rights, they are not happy with this bill. But this bill has been tabled. One reading's done. Second,
suspended, right?
Yeah, and then now the whole thing is suspended until June.
Yeah.
Do we have time to push for changes? And if so, what are the specific changes you'd like to see?
I mean, there's a plus side, right?
Mm-hmm.
This 3 months could potentially buy us a little bit more time to convince the government and MPs that there are provisions that should be reviewed, that should yeah. strengthen constitutional protections for vulnerable populations, that this bill may not effectively address what it claims to address. So this quote-unquote influx of foreigners, for example, or whatnot, you know, so abusive citizenship provisions. But these amendments, and convince them that these amendments will not necessarily solve the problems that the government claims it will address, right? However, there's also a downside to this extension, right? Is that the provision that the government said it would not amend, that 1E, that catch-all safeguard against statelessness?
Right.
Yep. There's a risk, right, that it might be reintroduced. And so it's a good and bad thing, right? Like, okay, this buys us a little bit more time, but what if they reintroduce that provision? So I think there's just a little bit of anxiety, but right. also opportunity.
So how are y'all approaching this, Malini? Are y'all still looking to decouple? Because that was a word that was going around a lot, mm-hmm. right? That was mm-hmm. the narrative that the MCRA was pushing for, which is telling separate. People to separate the bill, to decouple. Put aside the sexist law, that one change, you push that through, make it happen. The rest we can discuss, negotiate, debate as the time comes.
Definitely. I mean, we remain with the same stand where mm-hmm. it needs to be decoupled, and I think it is a very logical thing to do, especially in the next 3 months or 2 months-ish. We don't have a task force that's actually working on what's the implication of this bill, especially on the regressive amendments that we're talking about. And what's really clear here is we know the Mother's Amendment is a progressive one and it should be done. So retroactively, it should go forward. And the best way to do or go about this is to really get this bill sent to the Parliamentary Select Committee, which is the PSSE. And from there, it will just give opportunity for MPs to fine-tune the wording, separate things that need not to go forward first, and, you know, ensure the mother's one is retroactively applied. So there is definitely an opportunity for us right there to sort of separate it. And we want to separate it, right? Why we want to separate it is because the impact, mm-hmm. simple, the impact, right? In terms of, secondly, we also want additional safeguards against statelessness to be introduced for foreign wives.
Right.
Suri spoke about how, you know, they have a chance of their citizenship being revoked if the marriage fails. And I think what we know for sure after studying these laws is that it's not protected against statelessness. So go ahead. Do the, you know, whatever things that you want to do, but ensure that they're protected against statelessness, because we don't practice dual citizenship, right? And then thirdly, the amendment relating to, on the age, mm-hmm. where there is a reduction of age, that needs to be very carefully done. Your next question is actually on, this girls who don't have a citizenship, one of your other final question, right? About these girls who don't have citizenship, and then the minister comes in and says about, I will assist them. But the main point about this case is that they could not get a citizenship up till they were 21 years old. And now they are 26, around that age. And this group don't have a pathway for citizenship. And so without realizing or understanding who are going to be impacted, because these are all Malaysian fathers' children or Malaysian parents who have adopted these children. So without knowing this implication, we won't know. And we have spoken in length about the permanent residency provision. That's something we want to ensure that, you know, it protects people from becoming stateless, and especially for stateless permanent residents, so that their children don't become stateless, right? There's no intergenerational link of statelessness
right.
here. Yeah. So, you know, if there was any changes, it has to be this. And we want to, like, really carefully look into this. But on another note, it's very, very important to realize stateless persons don't know they're stateless mm-hmm. in our country. This is not a term that they associate with or have ability to fight for themselves. They don't recognize that situation they are in. Because they don't recognize this, they're never going to find out how these laws are going to impact them.
Right.
So until MPs don't take full responsibility explaining to their constituency what is these laws are going to be, I don't think so it's fair for us to do this at all.
Let's go for a very quick break. On the show with me today are Malini Romalo and Suri Kempe of the Malaysian Citizenship Rights Alliance. We will be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and on the show with me today are Malini Romalo and Suri Kempe of the Malaysian Citizenship Rights Alliance. In this episode, Malini and Suri are catching us up to speed on all the drama surrounding the proposed constitutional amendments, which will severely impact stateless people. This conversation is always also available as a podcast. If you like conversations like these, you can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on the BFM app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Now, many MPs appear to be quiet about this issue, including the ones who campaigned on this issue before GE15, promising to resolve this issue, taking highly progressive stance. In your conversations with MPs in general, do you sense ignorance, malice, or just agnosticism?
So, for us at least, I know with the Mother's Amendment, right? Mm-hmm. So let's just call it the Mother's Amendment
right.
for brevity's sake.
Right.
It was an election promise in pretty much like majority of the election manifestos. And a lot of political parties wanted to make good on that election promise. And that's a great thing, right? However, when the government introduced these additional regressive amendments, there wasn't what we sensed when we spoke to a lot more MPs and briefed them on the regressive provisions, even without having looked at the bill, right? We knew generally what they were about. I think we got the sense that MPs were possibly unaware of the full extent of the implications of these regressive amendments.
Right.
Because, like Malini said earlier, not MPs are not necessarily constitutional experts, right? Even among law practitioners, not everyone's a constitutional expert. And so when the government introduced, for example, when they say, okay, we're going to remove or we plan to remove children of PRs' ability to get citizenship by operation of law, what does that mean, right? And so a lot of MPs we spoke to, for example, weren't aware that Orang Asli and Orang Asal would be primarily impacted by
right.
the removal of, say, the word permanently resident in Article 1A, right? A lot of people, when the government says, okay, well, we're going to make sure to avoid marriages of convenience, we're going to make sure that we can remove a foreign wife's citizenship, right? We can revoke her citizenship in the event that the marriage fails. That sounds reasonable enough, mm-hmm. but many people, what MPs don't realize is that the process to obtain citizenship already takes 10 to 12 years. And
right.
a 10 to 12 year marriage is not a marriage of convenience. And if that foreign wife receives Malaysian citizenship, she has to give up her prior citizenship to her first country, right? To the other country. And if you then remove the Malaysian citizenship, she becomes stateless.
Right.
So, you know, it's a little bit of a thought process where you kind of have to process this information. And a lot of MPs weren't aware of that. And so which is why I think that blow up on social media, when people were like, oh my God, orang asli, orang asal will be really affected by some of these provisions. You are going to deny orang asli, orang asal their constitutional right to citizenship. The outcry and the outrage was huge because that will be the impact, right? And so the same goes for, I think, a lot of the MPs. A lot of them weren't aware. A lot of them said, you know, oh, but the government said, you know, oh, they're going to resolve some of these issues like baby dumping and stuff like that.
Right.
Foreigners dumping their babies in Malaysia. But if you had time to analyze the implications of the bill, then and these amendments, then you would realize that a lot of what was proposed wouldn't actually solve the problems that the government said it was going to solve.
Mm. Right. So I get the sense that this is really, like, I think, like, y'all have been stressing for so long. It's something that shouldn't be rushed, and it is being rushed when clearly most people do not have a full comprehension of the severity of the situation. Malini, do you get a sense of why the Home Ministry is fiercely and so passionately bent on pushing this amendments through? Because the Home Minister, Dato' Sri Saifuddin Nasution, in the name of championing these amendments that he wishes to make, that the Home Ministry wishes to make, he has thrown Filipinos under the bus. He has blamed Indonesians. He has blamed Rohingya refugees. And, you know, all in the name of protecting national security and how all these different communities can be a security threat. At one point, he even blamed Singaporeans. What is going on that front from your understanding? Why are they so passionate about pushing this bill through?
I think we're getting the sense of the idea behind this is to tighten up the law in general.
Restrict citizenship,
Restrict citizenship. And so what's really confusing for us is that since when Filipinos, Indonesians, refugees had access to our citizenship, like how, apart from through a naturalization pathway, no other pathways are available for them to access citizenship. And I think if you have been closely following through our responses to the minister as well, we have been trying to get back into the point that this is Malaysian origin stateless persons that we're talking about. We're not talking on behalf of foreigners. We're not talking about refugees whose situation could be very undetermined. We're actually talking about Malaysian-born children who have strong links to Malaysia through parentage or in a precarious situation, being abandoned or a foundling child in this country. So the whole idea here is narrative, right? We spoke about narrative, and I think the government has the privilege of building this narrative to get the buy-in. That's the point here.
Right.
Right? And every MPs, it's related to the previous question as well. Like, you know, every MPs that we attempted to speak, there was a sense of like, oh, this is to address marriage of convenience. But no one goes into, does it really address, and what is the protection for the mother or the foreign spouse who is in this country? No one is doing that second layer check. They're just buying into the narratives. And so this particular analogy that I remember was quite furious, and I responded quite immediately as well, is that fact that he said, you know, foreigners are abandoning babies in the hospital, and we know for sure the parents are, you know, foreigners, and now they would access Malaysian citizenship through the foundling provision. And I think it was so easy for me to respond to it, because if you knew the parents were foreigners, then reach out to the embassies. They are not foundling. As simple as that. Do what you need to do, bilateral agreements and etc., because that's how Singapore deals with it. I mean, we're being thrown that Singapore practices so and so and so, let's tighten up our laws. That was a, you know, conversation that kept being brought up. Then why are we not practicing these simple regulations? I think I feel that a lot of these amendments are very superficial to say that we have done something. But in actual, it doesn't address the root causes. And that's exactly where the position of civil society organizations, because we are really trying to see that, you know, this is not going to address the root causes of the problems in our country.
So the Home Minister and his supporters, members of his party, they have repeatedly emphasized in response to the criticism by MCRA that he's highly efficient in approving citizenship applications. He's the most efficient Home Minister in decades. You know, look at all these citizenship applications that he has approved, that it is unfair to call either the Home Minister, the Home Ministry or the government cruel. What is your response to this?
No, that's a good question. And it's also true in the sense that, yes, he is the most efficient home minister who has been approving citizenship applications. So well done to him. Kudos. And I think he's a little bit mad at us for the criticism that he's received, right, with regards to this bill. And so I think we want to put it out there. And say thank you for approving all of these citizenship applications. Well done to you. However, it is also, I think what we need to be clear about is that it is also a means to an end. Essentially, he's saying, well, I'm going to I'm going to move more people into citizenship categories that require bureaucratic approval, that require approval from the government. So to do that, I'm going to get rid of this entire backlog of citizenship applications that by right we should have processed. I feel like every KDN minister has to deal with this backlog, and it is a perennial / inherited problem, right? And so in summary, while it is great that he is approving this huge backlog that's been piling up on KDN's doorstep, it doesn't mean that, for example, in the case of mothers with overseas-born children, it doesn't mean that all mothers and with overseas-born children will get their applications in on time, right? Which means that there are still overseas-born children, two Malaysian mothers, who do not have citizenship. And the second one is, it doesn't guarantee that any minister who comes in after him will also as expeditiously approve citizenship applications, right? Because again, it is at the behest of the minister and anyone he appoints, right? It gives authority to. And the fact that he's moving more categories of people into citizenship categories that require approval into citizenship by registration means that it is entirely logical to assume that a backlog might again pile up, right?
Right.
Clearing this one backlog doesn't prevent another backlog from forming. And there's no guarantee. He cannot in any way guarantee that another backlog will not happen.
Right.
Right. Because you're essentially transferring, you're taking away citizenship, people who've had the right to citizenship by operation of law, and moving them into citizenship by registration.
Right.
And that means applications, that means more approvals.
Yeah.
Right. Malini, I want to get your thoughts on this as well, because I think Suri brings up one very important point, is that even if we buy into the narrative that this is an efficient Home Minister who does a lot more approvals compared to previous Home Ministers, I'm sure Saifuddin is doing a good job on that front, maybe better job than his predecessors, but Saifuddin may not be there forever.
Yeah.
Governments come and go. Political parties change. Ministers come and go, but the laws and the amendments that is left behind, the structures, the institute, those things remain even after the minister goes. And it's not easy to make a constitutional amendment again if it's already made.
To be honest, he is one of the best that we have ever had, because a lot of our cases impacted stateless persons. They have been taking a lot of initiative, like when he's present in a certain constituency, they would take their files and reach out to him. And a lot of the personal experiences have been that his officers addresses them. yeah, and gives direct attention to these cases, and which is really, really good. But I think along the way, while we are trying to have a conversation, I mean, to be honest, we have never had the opportunity to sit down and speak to him directly. We have not. Not even any of his officers.
Not for the lack of trying, though.
we really tried, and mm-hmm. we really wanted to speak to him, because it's confusing for me. Like, you have a minister who is willing to address the backlog, but he's also wanting you to accept that, trust me, this these amendments are, you know, going to address the backlogs and stuff like that. And we, who have worked on this for years and years and years, it's not a recent thing. I mean, statelessness has been present in our country for a really long time. And with that, we definitely know these laws, and we know to what extent it protects stateless person. And asking us to give up this law on the namesake of backlog being addressed, it did not make sense to us. Mm-hmm. And that was really, really hard. You know, that's why we were having a lot of frictions with the ministry. Like, imagine, he's doing the right thing, but at the same time, you know, with the amendment, he is not doing the right thing. And we joke, actually, in Dra, we have this quote that we joke about, that, you know, saya sayang Saifuddin, but bantah pemindahan. You know, bantah the pindahan zalim.
Right.
Because he really puts us in a very conflicting position, like, you know, you are getting approvals, but let me amend the law. But why are you amending the law when it's not even addressing the root causes of statelessness, Khan? So it's really, really confusing for us.
And that's the thing, right? Clearing the backlog is not an institutional reform, or it's not an institutional guarantee. It is, you're doing what is in front of you right now, and that's all good.
Right.
And we love it. But it will not address, A, it will not address these problems, and B, it will definitely not prevent the negative impact of these proposed amendments, right? And so at the end of the day, it's great that you're approving them. It's great that these the backlog is being addressed. However, there's a huge however there that needs to be addressed. These proposed amendments, the way we understand them, will cause a huge institutional problem that could become a legacy for years to come, right?
Absolutely. So which then begs the question, right? Should this bill even be under the Home Ministry to begin with? Because if I remember correctly, Malini, in one of our earlier conversations, mm-hmm. right, mm-hmm. when this issue started to really pick up steam, and as I understand, the bill was first under the Law Ministry, which was very smooth, you know, very human rights centric, and then it went to the Home Ministry, and then the problem started. And I don't want to necessarily blame the Home Minister, right? Because the Home Ministry is in charge of national security.
Yeah.
Leave it to them, they'll make getting citizenship as difficult as possible for everybody. They'll increase police powers, etc. Because everything is seen through the lens. Everything and everyone is seen through the lens of a security threat. But the changes that are being pushed, especially by the mothers, right? You know, it comes from a human rights perspective. It comes about fighting sexism and, you know, these kind of patriarchy that's baked into the laws. So shouldn't there be some sort of PSSC or some kind of committee which comprises of parliamentarians across parties who care about this issue from both a human rights perspective, mm-hmm. we bring in the people that care about it from a national security mm-hmm. perspective, you bring you guys in, the MCRA, bring in people like, you know, Prof. Shad and so on and so mm-hmm. forth, constitutional experts, sit down in a committee, deliberate, come up with the bill, a new bill altogether, if you all want to, if the government really wants to make a lot of changes, right? And then see what are the compromises that can be made instead of being a bill spearheaded by the Home Ministry. What is your take on that?
That's exactly what we're requesting for through the PSSC since the first reading is done. But, you know, it resonates so much because that has been our trouble. We don't know what's the impact on orphanages, JKM. We really want the Ministry of Women to be part of this. We really want, you know, the Ministry of Economic to be part of this, because it's so important for us to analyze what is the impact to the country. In, you know, okay, cool, this is something that this government, Madani government, is doing to do it right now, but the next government, the following governments that comes in, what's the impact it's going to be on the country? And then our international standing by amending this law is like, is this in line with, I mean, you have security issues, but these are not an isolated situation. Different countries have it. So what's going to be the rating of our international standing in that sense, right? So these are the areas that I feel it was not done properly. We as stakeholders was never part of this discussion. In fact, I attempted on behalf of JA to sort of raise a question, Kamar Haas, to basically ask that, you know, do we know the impact of, you know, children being born out of wedlock and left to be stateless in the country? What is it going to do to Malaysian men who are voters in this country but have stateless children and cannot access, you know, facilities? What's the impact, right? And they said, you know, the question, I mean, it was responded by the deputy KDN minister, and he basically says that this is not within our purview. Mm. So I really think it's a problematic way of doing things. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly it. I remember when we went for the consultation in June last year, right, when KDN first, in the Home Ministry first introduced, okay, well, these are the proposed amendments. And we raised the fact that this would worsen statelessness. This would make it much harder for people who are in the country and have citizenship issues, right? This would worsen statelessness. What is your response to that? And their response was, oh, itu bukan masalah. This is not our problem. This is some that would then fall under the Ministry of Women, right? And so this is my point, though, and goes back to exactly what you were saying, which is that you need to, this is an interministerial problem. The impacts are not isolated to national security, right? You need it, there are going to be far-reaching impacts. And the decision that they've made, the decision by one ministry to push these reforms, for example, will have overflowing effects on another ministry. And therefore, it needs to be, like you said, a multi-stakeholder interministerial committee that looks at the overall impact, because the problems that are then generated by the proposed amendments will land at the doorstep of another ministry. And right. Then what? In fact, we see it now, like what we're doing, what NGOs are doing, civil society is doing on the ground, is dealing with the effects of current existing law, the gaps in current practices. And what we're hoping for is proper consultative solutions, right? Not half-baked and amendments that haven't thought through the potential negative consequences of these actions. And
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, for us, it's just like, my God, this is going to cause so many more problems. Can we please look at holistic solutions and not just these this rush job of regressive amendments that will not resolve issues that you're concerned about?
So we have about a couple of months before the next parliamentary sitting. Before we wrap this conversation up, would you all have a final message, especially on what should listeners, what the public, how can they get involved? What should they do in this 2 to 3 months?
I can start. Yeah. Again, maybe Malini. So in the next 3 months, I think the crucial issue is keep talking about it, mm-hmm. right? Because it's not over yet. That's the big in neon lights message is it's not over yet. We need to keep talking about it. We need to keep it on the table. And we need to be alert, right? We need to know what is happening, how it unfolds in the next 3 months. And therefore, it is important to, A, keep the pressure, keep talking about it, keep the pressure on our MPs, that this is something we are still concerned about. This current suspension of, you know, the process, the tabling process is not over yet. And therefore, we can't let up yet either.
Malini?
Yeah. And to me, is if you are an impacted person, now. Now is your time to actually reach out to your MPs, ask them about the status of your case, and see if the amendments will actually help you, because we're pretty sure it's not going to help you. And how is this going to address the situation of Malaysian parent without a citizenship? And I just want to, you know, people to realize how important are these amendments, especially if you're a citizen in this country, is to, you know, in 1983, we sort of ensured that every marriage has to be legalized. And the outcome of this amendment in 1983 was that, you know, Malaysian fathers cannot pass on citizenship to their children born out of wedlock. And that's why we have an overflow of stateless persons among these categories, right? So any amendment that is not thoroughly thought can leave us in this situation. So we have probably tens of thousands of stateless children born out of wedlock. And now imagine if this amendment goes through in 10 years to come, what numbers we would be handling.
And just to underscore once again, Marlene's point is that if you're an affected person, for Malaysian mothers with overseas born children who have not yet been able to, have not yet had the chance to submit an application, now is the time.
Yeah.
Submit your applications now, right? It is really, really important, especially if the government decides to proceed with the amendment that would make it, that, and it would not be retroactive, right? So,
yeah.
So now is the time, given that we have such an efficient Home Minister who is approving applications. I think now is the time before they get caught in that transition process where applications again are not being approved. Right?
Suri, Malini, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having us.
It was a pleasure. Thank
yes.
you.
I've been speaking to Malini Romalo and Suri Kempe of the Malaysian Citizenship Rights Alliance. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.